For the past few days, I've spoken of practice in terms of freedom of thought, freedom from thought, freedom of emotion, thought, freedom from emotion, thought, freedom of characteristics, freedom from characteristics, and various other ways of expressing this. And we've clarified some of the comments of ancestors in our tradition as relates to this not avoiding cause and effect, and at the same time not being blinded by cause and effect. So today I want to continue this in a way to talk about our practice as we continue to the end of Sesshin and after Sesshin, because Sesshin continues in our life. And the way I want to do this is talk a little bit about this kind of practice as expressed by some of my teachers. As some of you are aware, the Dokusan room also serves as what's known in Japanese as a kaisando, a founder's hall or hall of ancestors. And on the wall there's pictures of my teachers and also my parents. But for this purpose, I want to emphasize my teacher Soa Nakagawa Roshi, Taizan Maizumi Roshi, and Joko Beck. And speak a little bit of their ways of expressing something that in a way is connected that with what we've talked about the past few days. I'm not really going to talk about koan practice with them, though I began koan practice with Soen Roshi in my bumbling beginner's way, and then completed formal koan practice with Maizumi Roshi primarily, and then went over some of the end of koan work primarily connected to the Bodhisattva precepts and some other material again with Joko. I don't talk much about koan practice here. I bring them up from time to time, but that's something more for in the Dokusan, at least in this kind of setting. Occasionally I have done it. But each of those three, Soen Roshi, Maizumi Roshi, Joko, and I don't use title with Joko just because she didn't want to use title, so I respect her wishes and simply refer to her as Joko, not to denigrate or hold her in any less esteem than either of the others. They use the title, so I use the title. They each had their way of talking about practice, or let us say favorite expressions of expressing practice, that's very similar to what we've been talking about and what the various ancestors who I brought up and clarified talked about. So I'll pick out a particular phrase of for each of them, and not that that's the only one, nor is it limited to that as their ways of expressing practice for in this kind of bodhisattvic approach, this approach of endless dimension, universal life that we encounter from morning to night. I first heard that phrase when Soen Roshi used it as part of the dedication. And Soen Roshi had a, you could call it a mantra, that he created and used. Namu Dai Bo Sa, which I've spoken and written a little about. I wouldn't call it a mantra because really it's an approach to practice. It's an approach to everyday, all day practice, all the time practice, which is exactly what we're talking about when I bring up freedom of characteristics, freedom from characteristics. The practice of manifesting this bodhisattvic activity, this bodhisattvic life that we are. Being Namu Dai Bo Sa literally can translate as being one with the great bodhisattva. The great bodhisattva that we encounter from morning to night, except when we believe our thoughts about those, we believe the characteristics and judgments about him and her, about ourself and the various conditions, then we cannot live in the midst of circumstances and conditions, in the midst of cause and effect, except poisoning it with greed, anger, and ignorance, and reactions of fear and attachment. Namu Dai Bo Sa, being one with great bodhisattva, or more specifically, bowing. Whether actually or without putting the hands together and bowing with to everything we encounter as nothing but our bodhisattvic life, or seeing how and where we refuse to bow, seeing how and where we believe stories and judgments that exclude this circumstance and this person and this condition from this great bodhisattva that manifests as this endless dimension, universal life. So in a way, Namu Dai Bo Sa is an ongoing koan. Not something you need to give some answer to. That's not a real koan. It's a koan to be the koan. Be Namu Dai Bo Sa in the midst of our reactive judgment and fear. Embrace it. Embrace the circumstances and conditions. In some ways, and I've talked about this, there's a similarity to the story in the Lotus Sutra of a bodhisattva who's called Bodhisattva, I will not disparage you. That's one way of translating the Lotus Sutra. That phrase could be his name, her name could be in a different form. I will not slander you, I will not. But it's a bodhisattva who everyone meets bows to you, Buddha to be. I bow to you, Buddha to be. Even encountering people who get angry, how dare you do that to me? How dare you bow? You're making fun of me. Even to those who curse and start throwing stones, rocks at him, even as he or she must turn and run while bowing to you, Buddha, to be, even running from the stones, running from their attempts to harm and hurt the bodhisattva. I want to say it's chapter 25 of the Lotus Sutra, but I might be wrong. It might be 21, it might be a different one completely. I don't remember what chapter number it is, but it makes no difference. You can find it if you're interested. And the Buddha in the Lotus Sutra highly praises this bodhisattva for that kind of practice. Actually, 21 or 25 might be a kanon chapter in the Lotus Sutra. Anyway, makes no difference exactly the number. You could find it, and if you can't, consult me and I will help with finding which one it is. So this is Namu Dai Bo Sa. Embodying Namu Dai Bo Sa in all encounters, morning to night, all our activities, morning to night. See? That's what Soen Roshi's talking about. Every day, all day practice. We can do it when we're doing Zazen, but doing it throughout the day, or at least doing it when we especially notice how we're believing our reactions, our thoughts of, or seeing how much we refuse to do this when she says such and such, when he does such and such, or when some anonymous person is walking down the street and doing what we consider stupid, foolish, or even minor things like dressing in ways that we say, ha ha ha, look at them, or other things. Or when we have all sorts of reactions to public figures, or politicians, or events in the world as people bring up. How can we bow to that as... how can we be one with the great bodhisattva that's manifesting in that way? What is that? See, in a way, that's a wonderful koan. All the time koan. Koan meaning not something you figure out, but being the koan and manifesting this mind that is our life in the cause and effect moment that we're living, in the midst of being human and maybe being somewhat caught up in attachments and self-centeredness, and refusing all the while to embrace this moment life, refusing to allow the myriad dharmas to advance and attest to self, refusing to be awakened by the 10,000 dharmas, and yet we make our effort. Namu Daibo. And Soen Roshi encouraged all sorts of people to use this practice, and in all sorts of ways talked about it. Maizumi Roshi's expression that he used, and actually is the title of a posthumous book collection of his talks, is called Appreciate Your Life. Always, often, I should say, not always, often the talk to, I want you to really appreciate your life. Appreciate your life. Okay? Now, it's easy for us to appreciate when we are served wonderful food or are honored as, oh, you've been the most wonderful worker in this division, or people talk about how much they like what we presented or wrote or how we're dressed, or, and you go on. And it's easy for us to appreciate when the weather is just the way we want it, and we've got friends coming over, and you could add on your particular. If you play golf, as Shoujo does, when you get a hole in one, or even an eagle, that's, I think, a hole in two, isn't it? I've learned something from... I've never played golf. I should say I swung a golf club a few times when my grandfather-in-law brought those out, but I've never played golf. See, that's easy to appreciate. But how about appreciating the bogey, or being stuck in the sand trap or the water when we're golfing, or the flat tire when we're in a rush to get to an important meeting, or being told at a meeting, you know, we really don't like this presentation you've made. We really disagree with this. This contract, this proposal, just, it's all wrong. Or whatever else. See, what is appreciating in that moment? See, appreciating doesn't have anything to do with like versus dislike, though we tend to use that word that way. See, appreciate is much deeper, if we use that kind of word, much deeper. The fundamental practice, as Dogen said, flowers fall, weeds spring up. See, appreciating flowers falling, appreciating weeds springing up. Appreciate your life. Appreciate aching legs and not being able to sit still, agitated and having to sit in the midst of agitation, or monkey mind chatter, or a noisy neighbor, or, and you all can fill in the orms, the aching back and injuries that cause pain. What is appreciating aging and dying? Appreciate your life. This is ongoing koan all the time. Of course, as with Maizumi Roshi, I worked practice many koans, but appreciate your life was an ongoing koan that he offered freely to all of us, to all beings. Appreciate your life. Joko's phrase that I'll pick out was the phrase being open and loving. Joko talked about that is exactly what our life practice is. And as she pointed out, as soon as you discover you're not open, not loving in this circumstance, with that person, with these events, with this body condition, mind condition, right there, you're being offered your practice, your effort opportunity. And she, like, paraphrase her or quote her, since most of the time, we're not open and loving, and we discover it if we're attentive and present. Most of the time, our practice is right in front of us. Oh, this headache. Oh, I don't want this. This is making it so difficult to speak. See, being open, loving, headaches, body aches, illness. Being open, loving with Joko had trigeminal neuralgia, some of you might remember. And I remember, both because she told me and both because I witnessed it, how much pain. And she said she used to stay up at night screaming sometimes from the pain because nothing helped it. No medication, no various bodily treatments. Until finally she received a treatment which involved, I think it was something called a gamma knife, I don't know, some sort of medical procedure that involved cutting the nerve in order to relieve the pain. See how to be open and loving with those pains. Don't, I might have something off on the exact procedure, medical procedure. I don't remember the details. And that was a while ago, and procedures for that condition have changed since then, I think. But be that as it may. So three different approaches, phrases, that are not meant to be memorized as phrases, but rather meant to be everyday koan. See, koan that ongoing, our life koan offers us the opportunity right in our face. See, that's all our life is the opportunity to see where and how we get stuck in self-centered dramas, self-centered poisons, fears. Those are koans to encourage and support us in embracing the intimacy of life as it is. Even the life with the news about Islamic State beheading Christians, Yazidis, or whoever else they don't like. Even with diagnosis of cancer, even with fear of losing certain capacities. See? Koans are opportunities to embrace this ongoing change that is nothing but our Buddha nature, and yet require us to testify and manifest as this require us, meaning we must do it, despite the fact that we have no need to do it, despite the fact that nothing is gained by doing it, yet we must. So these koan are supports and crutches to help us, poorly crippled by our self-centeredness, to manifest what's just this life. Okay. I can speak more, but I will stop now, and maybe we could clarify this and some of the matters I've brought up in earlier talks. So I'll stop now, and if you need to, you can change your posture, move your legs. So please, those of you who've been here, this is a gift from those three teachers to support our ongoing practice. If we clarify it, then we could make good use of this gift, these gifts. Isn't there? It's not my tradition, but in Christian tradition, there's the three gifts that the Magi brought. Am I right? So here are three gifts from three Chan ancestors, three Zen ancestors, to support us in being this bodhisattvic life that we are. Excuse me if I brought in another tradition that I really can't speak much about, but somehow it just struck me as a nice phrase. So, yes, Shoujo.
Well, appreciate, isn't that some sort of a derivation or something from the word precious?
Sounds like to me. Good. I don't know, but I accept your assumption. So it's this precious life, this precious endless dimension universal life that now we have, see, rarely encountered even in hundreds and thousands of millions of ages, and now we have this human birth, this capacity, having encountered the practice, to be able to manifest this. Somewhere they say it's like a great ocean with a little, call it a lifesaver, round ring floating on the top of the ocean, and an animal, let's say a turtle, comes up, and the luck and the chance of its nose going through that ring on the vast ocean. That's how rarely encountered is this opportunity to practice. So it's that precious.
What you were talking about, extrapolate, I guess, that the preciousness of the things we don't like.
Yes.
That really don't like. You know, really get to us and just tear us up.
Yeah.
And that's where I have trouble.
And yet they manifest as our life. See? This is ongoing cause and effect that's manifesting as our life of the Buddha. Ongoing change is Buddha nature. It's the cause and effect that's coming together, not in someone else's life. They have their own, but this comes together in our life. So it's our opportunity. No blame involved. No punishment involved. It's our opportunity to manifest this bodhisattvic life that we are, whether we quote like it or don't like it. That's why these teachers are offering us help with their phrase, their koan, namudaibosa, their koan. Appreciate your life. Not pick and choose your life and say, this is the part that Buddha must have warned, but this part, I don't know, some demon brought me that. I shouldn't have it. It's a mistake. The universe is wrong. Cause and effect of the universe are wrong that they gave me this. They just misdirected it. This I don't have to be open and loving with. This shouldn't be mine. Yeah, you're right. How to see and not be trapped by our ideas and reactions of what's precious and what's not precious. See, that's why it's a koan. Because what seems natural to us, which is called self-centeredness, which is called reactive habits, which is called greed, anger, and ignorance, which is the poisons, the fears. I didn't make this up. Look, listen to the Buddha's sermons, look at the texts, you'll see. That itself is our precious opportunity. It's easy when we're in wonderful luxury and people are saying how great your practice is and I truly learn from you and I really appreciate all that you do and on, then it's easy to say, oh yes, I appreciate this life. That's easy. There's no need for that. No need to say appreciate this life. So you're right, you're right, you're right. It's difficult to see the preciousness. That's why the ancestors have come in the different ways, and I've spoken about it for the past few days, so I'm not going to bring up again the various phrases from the sixth ancestor, from Matsu, from Wangpo, from Dogen, from others. See? As soon as we differentiate between what we like and what we don't like, what we think is pure and what we think is impure, what we think is Buddha and what we think is something else, we've missed our life. And that's the teaching in all the Chan traditions and in all the Buddhist traditions, if you look deeply. It's just our delusion that keeps us from not seeing our life for what it is. Just our delusion that keeps us from being awake. See, it's nothing extra that we need. Awake means all of a sudden seeing what's always been. You don't get anything extra when you awake. You don't come from, you know, think of it, when you wake up in the morning, have you come from someplace else? Sometimes seems to us that way when we're in a dream or whatever, but we wake up to where we've always been. Usually wake up in the same bed that we've been sleeping in, except that when we're sleeping we wake up with all sorts of strange things. We wake up that we've been grappling with enemies and so forth. I told Mushin one morning in Sashin, I dreamed that I had my hands and I was fighting with someone else whose hands were against mine, and you know, I was trying to resist them. And I woke up and it was like this. Literally, I went, oh. But in the dream, I really believed it. And all of a sudden, they're both my hands. See, all we encounter is this great bodhisattva, Namudaibosa, being one with this great bodhisattva that is our life, being one. See, not becoming one, being one. appreciating our life, not appreciating someone else's life, not appreciating our life after we fix it, not appreciating our life when we like it, but appreciating our life.
I always think I should fix myself. That's the life of what I'm experiencing. I've got to change myself or change the experience to some other experience that I like.
Yes, isn't it wonderful to see how we could misconstrue what our life is? See, that's what we do. We misconstrue it. And then out of that misconstruing, out of, if I use a fancy word, delusion or illusion, we do all sorts of crazy things because we miss what we are. We miss what this ongoing change or cause and effect is, and take it as something that's threatening us. I was born and I should have such and such and this way, and this is threatening me and it'll lead to my losses and my death, and that will be the end of me, and I'll be, you know. Then we're caught in the life-death story of gain and loss, likes and dislikes. It's very nice that you could notice and sense, I feel I should fix this, I should fix that. Not avoiding cause and effect. You all know of that, not all, but many of you know that koan, baijangs, yakujo's fox, baijang's fox, about this cause and effect matter. I've talked about it other times, and I think there's even an article about it in one of my books. Okay, so I'll leave it for now. Too much to talk about now. I want to stay on track. Yes. Thank you, Shodron.
Well, when we appreciate that we just won the lottery, that is the same kind of reactive habit as us failing to appreciate or reacting against the bad things that happen to us, it seems to me. So there's a practice
in that way,
in that situation too.
Yes.
But what do either of these practices look like? If I'm screaming in pain from some painful condition, and what does it look like for me to appreciate?
Good, I'm not going to tell you. That's got to be your koan. See, and see, just because we use the same word doesn't mean it's the same thing.
Well, I know. That's what I'm trying to say.
See, we become trapped by words when we use them in a one-sided way. So if we use the word appreciate in a one-sided way, then we never see the koan. Because then it's just appreciate equals I like. And likes and dislikes lead to endless difficulties. Because we're guaranteed not to always get what we like. Sometimes we'll get what we don't like. And sometimes, despite the fact that we get what we like, we're concerned that we'll lose what we got. Since you brought up the lottery, somewhere I remember reading that of the people that win big lotteries, often 5-10 years downstream, they have endless troubles as a result of that, of all sorts. I mean, this is, you know, just reportage, so I don't know that it's always so, but so I've heard. But it's important for us to not be trapped by words. Otherwise, we start having ideas of what that should look like. So Joko uses the word open and loving, but we then get ideas of what does it mean, and then we get trapped by ideas. In fact, that's always what traps us with koans, our ideas of the koan, or I should say, the koan reveals for us as we be the koan, as we manifest the koan, how much we are trapped by our words and ideas. It pries those open, so to speak, or we pry them open if we truly work. But I'll leave that aside. That's just an aside. So, yes. That's why I say these, whether it's Namudai Bosa, whether it's appreciate your life, or whether it's being open and loving, those are koan. Because of how much we want to interpret those words in the ways that suit us right now. And guaranteed in this life of ongoing change, we're guaranteed that we will get what doesn't suit us some of the time, if we think that's a significant basis for living our life.
So open and loving and screaming in pain are not incompatible.
Yes. But we don't have to figure it out, because just because we say they're not incompatible doesn't mean when we're screaming in pain we're going to say this is being open and loving. And it's not a matter of the words, it's a matter of how do we live this bodhisattva life. That's what those phrases are, encouragements and supports. But not because we then figure out something, but because we manifest it. We be the koan. Our life is that koan. Then the koan becomes clear and is manifested in our life. 1, 2, Musaki and Heidi. I'm sorry if I have to turn to see you because my bad eye. Anyway, because I don't see with this eye, as you know.
Could you just speak a little more?
I don't have too much to say about. I've actually written about it. There's actually a chapter in my book. I don't remember what's in my everything is the way book. So I have to look to Mushin and ask him, is there a chapter in the book about it? But there is. But, so I've spoken about it, but I will say, in a sense, it's embracing and being intimate with the circumstance. If you want, literally, you can bow down with it. Bow full bows if you want. If you want, just Namudai Bosa. You could use it that way to give yourself, to be able to embrace the agitation and chatter and reactiveness and not give in to them or go beyond their limits, or all sorts of ways. I want you to be creative with it. A koan means you have to be creative so that it's yours, not that you follow some formula. See, that's why it's a koan. It's the creativity of your life that you manifest in that, so it becomes your koan. You chew it up and you're chewed up by it. So, okay? Yeah, Heidi.
I'm thinking about the screaming in pain.
Yes.
And part of our practice is to take the appropriate action.
Yeah.
And it might be calling 911.
If 911 could do something, unfortunately, when at least in Joko's case, when she was screaming in pain, it was because none of the medication that she was given at that point touched the pain, because it was nerve pain, and none of the physical therapies or other things touched that pain. So she reported to me at nights and other times. And I know that myself. After my surgery, there was times I had so much pain that literally the only way, just my recent surgery, the only way I could deal with it was screaming pain. It was nerve pain, and I knew it. Now, I must say, I'm not much for taking heavy-duty narcotics. I just, because the effects are just so pervasive in my body, so I'd rather deal with the pain with... I took some painkillers, but limited amount, but sometimes I literally, screaming with the pain, helped me be the pain. And then the pain, after 15 minutes, a half hour, dissipated. This much of this pain was also pain of being pumped full of gas. In order to do the surgery they did, they had to pump my body full of gas. Unfortunately, after the surgery and after they removed my organs, the gas stayed in there. And they don't remove the gas. So the gas goes all over your body and literally it's like punching you continuously. And the nerves are already cut from the surgery. So anyway, I don't want to go into more details about it. But fortunately, I was able to do it without anyone else in the house having to listen to it and keeping the doors and windows closed, and you know, and it worked. So, you know, if I thought calling 911 would have worked, you know, and was necessary and appropriate, but it wasn't, and it's okay.
But in my life, it has been.
Then one does it.
And then begin to appreciate the help that you give.
Yes. Yes. And appreciate that you even have the opportunity to call 911. Some people don't have that opportunity or ability. Or 911 doesn't come. Whereas here it comes, here in Champaign area, it comes fairly quickly. So at least my own experience from neighbors who've had to use it. I used it once in Richmond when I was in the living room because of the pain, and it was in the middle of the night, and all of a sudden there was this bright flash of light outside the closed windows and closed shades. So I got up and looked, and there was this, right across the street, there was this car in flames. The whole car was just flaming. And so, you know, I called 911, and fortunately they came very quickly and put it out before it exploded. Or at least that was my fear of what to do. That's appreciating, you know, all sorts of things occur. So, anyway, that's an aside. I'm sorry. Someone here want to do a hand? No? Yes. One, two.
I'm always looking for ways to wiggle in and appreciate that I'm resisting. And sometimes I can't find that way in, and I'm stuck in the resistance. And so, to use Jim's word of precious, that it seems like sometimes, I know words are inadequate, but they're all we have, really, to learn this. And it seems that if I can use the word precious, such as what could possibly be precious about this situation, it might give me a little inroad into considering that that's possible.
Yeah. And considering that it's not that you have to go past the resistance. The resistance itself is what we need to be open and appreciate, if I mix those metaphors, so to speak, or those words. That's exactly it. And sometimes we have an idea that we have to get somewhere else, that there's something wrong with that, as you say, resistance in the physical or whatever other way it's there.
So see? Are you saying appreciate the resistance?
Yes. See, just like when there's mind chatter, it's not trying to push it away, but being, as I said, the spacious, if you want to say, spacious field that the mind chatter can chatter about in, gallop about in, to use that kind of image. See, it's when we're caught up in the resistance and resisting the resistance that it makes it all the more difficult, or caught up in I shouldn't have this agitation. My mind should be still and serene. What's the matter? Of course, we then become more agitated about the agitation.
So in appreciating the resistance, the appreciation can come from knowing that the resistance is your opportunity.
Not even get, that's a little too, what should I say? Too much thinking about it and trying to rationalize it. It's
trying to get in there.
Yes, but there isn't a getting in there. You are there. The resistance is, the pain is your life at this moment. Is this body, mind, cause and effect? Greed, anger and ignorance aren't things that we have to get rid of. Rather, in any way, their practice, in a sense, reveals them, transforms them as the three treasures, as the bodhisattvic energy that we can manifest. See, it's only our, if I use the word delusion or misperception, that makes us want to get rid of, what makes us want to fight the circumstances, fight, to go back to Jim, being stuck in the sand trap when you're playing golf, or be stuck in pain when that's there, or be with someone, you're grieving over someone who's dying, who you love and don't want to die, and yet that's what's happening, or various other. I pick a few, and you could, and they could be minor little things. It could be someone else getting called, getting praised in a meeting rather than you. How come they left me out? They didn't mention all the good things that I did. And they did just that little thing and it doesn't even count. It's not, how come? And we can become furious. Maybe none of you would become furious, but there are people who could.
I thought you were reading my mind.
So. Satiation. Yeah.
This is going back to what you said at the very end of the Dharma talk, so you may not remember, but you said something about these three koans that your teachers were offering to us.
Yes.
And you said something about not that we need them or not that we need to work with them.
I don't know what I said.
Well, I don't know. The idea was that there was the koan.
Yes.
And that we didn't necessarily need to work with it, which maybe is the same point you were making with Tim about, well, when you've been asleep and you wake up, you're where you always were.
Well, could be. I don't remember what I said. In one sense, this is offered for when it's necessary. It's medicine when there's illness. When there's no illness, no need for medicine. In fact, medicine will make you sick. As we sometimes say, we use mud to clean mud, but otherwise, which is called soap. Dirt cleans dirt, and soap is dirt. I mean, most of you know most soaps are fat and other products that you wouldn't want to use except to clean the dirt. Otherwise, it's gouging healthy skin. Sometimes that's an expression used in koans, that this is gouging skin that's healthy. Fundamentally, as you are nothing but this life of the Buddha. No need for any such thing called practice, and yet there's a great need for it because we don't believe that. No need to say appreciate your life if you appreciate your life. No need to say be open if that's how you are. If you're intimate with what arises, then no need to say be not knowing. No need to say just this. No need to encourage that if that's how you function and manifest your life. And yet there is a need because of how often somehow we manage not to. We manage to miss So since we manage to miss, it's there for help. We manage to hobble along, so we need a stick to help us. So, but I don't know what I'm sorry to say, I don't remember what I say after a while, so I can't always clarify what I meant when I said it. Speak a little louder.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about lacking.
Lacking.
I have constantly or often feel I'm lacking something.
Oh.
I'm lacking this.
Good.
Or
good.
Lacking that. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that.
That's a wonderful koan to notice it, since you often notice it, to take lacking and bow down to the bodhisattva lacking and turn it and look. Who's lacking whatever you believe you're lacking? Just take that and really chew on it. And take that lacking and look. Who's lacking whatever you say, the specific, not in the generalities, but in the specific that you believe I'm lacking this. I'm lacking that. Keep looking. Who's lacking that? See? All sorts of interesting stories about who you are, who's lacking what would be, what might not be. Who knows what you'll encounter? And just keep looking at them and just keep being with this lacking. In a way, lacking is this bodhisattva gift to you, the opportunity to be present with the presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, the presence of life of this moment, which you're saying are not enough, are inadequate, are wrong. They've left out what I'm supposed to have. They, meaning the universe, cause and effect, they, meaning whoever, left out what I'm supposed to have. And they've given me what I shouldn't have. So that's a wonderful koan to bring you into the moment and look, who's lacking? Or what is lacking? Or what's lacking? That's great. And of course, there's all sorts of skillful action. If you're hungry, you can ask, will you give me a meal? But I don't think that's what you're talking about. So most of us rarely are in that situation of that kind of lacking. But yeah, good, good. So your life koan is right there. Don't need anything more. And especially since it keeps reminding you, poking you, coming around and saying, here, practice time. Here, practice time. Not in a punitive sense, but in a encouraging sense. Look what you've got. Here's your rarely encountered moment to encounter the Dharma, to be the Dharma that you are. Not the Dharma you believe it is, which you call lacking, but the Dharma that you are, this true nature. Endless dimension, universal life, right here now. Nothing lacking, nothing extra. That's what the ancestors say. Obviously, David says, no, they're wrong. There's lacking here. That's the opportunity. Or maybe they are wrong. Maybe it's time for you to correct them. But check it out clear first, so that you're definitely clear on the lacking. Then we will be glad to hear your correction. So, check it out. Good, good. So you have a natural koan. Wonderful gift. That's rare that people have that and can see it so directly and clearly. There was someone, wait, there was someone else. I don't remember. Okay, Bruce.
Well, you just put me in mind of a recent tragedy I heard about. Somebody in my town, I didn't really know them personally. Uh-huh. Their husband was off in Hawaii surfing and had some kind of terrible accident, washed up on the beach. The wife, he was hospitalized, the wife flew out there.
Uh-huh.
And he, I guess his, was going to be paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of his life. Very athletic person up until that moment. And instructed his family to pull the plug. He couldn't survive without support.
He instructed his family, or his wife instructed.
That's my understanding, that he was completely lucid and able to communicate, and said that that's what his wishes were. And I just wonder what you think about that.
I have nothing to say.
Mm. I mean, there's lacking.
Let us leave it.
Okay.
There are people who are born like that.
Right.
In terms of David, I just want to bring back, and in a way it touches, I talked about this in Sunday Dharma talks at some point recently, I don't remember when. There's what's known as Hachi Dai Jin Gaku, which translates as the eight awarenesses of awakened person. The title is of a chapter of Shobo Genzo by Dogen, which is the last chapter that he wrote. And in a way, it's really a summarizing and reinterpreting the last talk of the Buddha before he died, which is on this subject. It's called the Eight Awarenesses of Awakened Person. And one of those is called knowing how to be satisfied with what we have. Knowing how to be satisfied with what we have. I talked a little about it, but if you want, I mean, you could look, you could read Dogen, and there's actually, Maizumi Roshi has a commentary that he wrote on that. It's in a book called Hazy Moon of Enlightenment, and there's comments on Dogen's, and Dogen is commenting on Shakyamuni Buddha. So I won't go into those anymore. And I did talk about it at some point recently, and it's probably even online.
It is online.
So, but that's, David, you might want to look at that. And there's one or two others that are connected to that. Knowing how to be satisfied with what we have. And since Bruce brings it up, there's also in the Proverbs, which is in the Hebrew, in the Jewish Mishnah, there's a text that, yes, Pirkei Avot, which has a phrase, Ezehu Asher HaSameach B'Chalkai. Who is the rich person who is the one who is happy, joyous, satisfied with what they have? And they have some other phrases there, like Ezehu Gibar HaKaivishas Yitzray. Who is the one who is strong, the one who is able to control his desires? I mean, I'm doing a loose translation, and if one of you wanted to challenge that translation, I accept your challenge. It is loose, but so this knowing how to be satisfied and not knowing how to be satisfied is really, and it, none of that stops you from going out and getting a better job with higher pay or any other things in terms of satisfied. But if we don't know how to be satisfied, then no matter what we have, we can't be satisfied. That's the important part in that Hachi Dainin Gaku. Enough. Thank you. Let us continue our practice. I appreciate your participation in Sesshin and your supporting each other and all the others in this ongoing practice, supporting this whole universe and manifesting this life that we are.